It's discouraging to think how many people are shocked by honesty and how few are shocked by deceit. Welcome, everyone. I'm McDaniel Phillips, and this is Times of Refreshing, a ministry of Bethesda Hall in partnership with TWR Asia. Kenneth Wong is our host. He's an author, teacher, and itinerant speaker. You know, in many parts of our society, men and women of honor and integrity are ridiculed with scorn and pity. As strange as it seems, today we seem to expect people to be dishonest. And we're absolutely shocked when we engage an honest person. What does it look like to be a virtuous person in troubled times? Well, in today's program, Kenneth considers four biblical men of integrity found in the Old Testament. Each of them exhibited remarkable integrity when tested under widely different circumstances in different times. Kenneth will join us in just a moment.
Hello, everyone. It's lovely to be with you again. We started on the subject of integrity yesterday, and we are going to continue with that today. You remember we considered the importance of integrity. In fact, it's an imperative. It's something we should have. It's not an optional extra. And we also looked at two ingredients of integrity in Psalms 25 and 26, and they are trust and truth. And these are the two things that make up integrity. What I'd like to do today is to consider with you four biblical men of integrity in the Old Testament. And they exhibited a remarkable degree of integrity when tested under widely different circumstances or conditions. And they lived in very different periods of time in history. So that we can understand this is something that is not new. The same challenges that we face today have been faced by men and women generations ago. There is nothing new under the sun. The first of these four biblical men of integrity is Joseph. And his particular condition is integrity in the face of immorality. So let's look at Joseph and consider integrity in the face of immorality. Although immorality has always been around, I think we are in an age and generation where this is a severe social problem more than at any other time in history. We are beset with challenges to morality behind and before, all around, some in more perverted forms and others in more covert forms. So this is something very relevant to us today. Now, we are just going to zoom in on one particular episode in the life of Joseph. And this is recounted in Genesis chapter 39. Joseph had been sold into slavery by his own brothers, and the Lord placed him in the service of an Egyptian master called Potiphar. I guess he was so trustworthy that his master made him the head of all his household servants. And the wife of that Egyptian master began to eye him and try to tempt him to sexual immorality. And I'm just going to go into one particular verse, and that is verse 9 of Genesis 39, which states Joseph's stand very clearly when he was faced with this challenge of morality. This was Joseph speaking back to the master's wife who was trying to tempt him while the master was away. And Joseph said, "There is no one greater in this house than I, nor has he kept back anything from me but you. But you are his wife. How then can I do this great wickedness and sin against God?" Notice that his loyalty was first and foremost to God, and therefore he could be loyal also to the earthly master whom God had appointed over him. and he would not sin against God, nor his master, nor his master's wife under any circumstances. This is what a man of integrity does. When there's nobody else around to say something to you, to watch you, or to tell you. He was the boss when the boss was not around. She may have been a desperate housewife, but he was a man of integrity. And a storyline like this would make great fodder for a modern-day TV serial with sexual innuendos. Joseph could demonstrate this kind of integrity in the face of immorality only because he has been constantly walking with his God. He was keeping to the integrity of his heart and mind, which has been with him consistently all along. Without this consistency, this inner oneness, wholeness, he would have fallen into temptation easily. And the proof of his integrity is that he remained unsullied in his spirit, even when he was wrongfully accused and imprisoned as a result of his integrity. He did not blame God or become bitter. Instead, he maintained his integrity. A woman may frame him, men may misrepresent and misunderstand him, but God knows and sees all things. His integrity remained intact and unimpaired because he could put his trust in the truthfulness and justice of God, who will do all things righteously. Next, let's look at the character of David. And David exhibited integrity in the face of enmity. This was David before he actually became king, although he had been anointed to become king. And we're going to read of this episode in 1 Samuel chapter 24. David exhibited integrity in the face of enmity when he was hounded and pursued for his life from place to place, time and again, by King Saul, who saw him as a threat to his throne. And on one of these occasions, there was a dramatic turn of events when David, who was the hunted, could have become the hunter. When Saul, who was his enemy, was literally given into David's hands by God. And we see the integrity of David's heart in this verse. And once again, we're just going to zoom in and look at this one verse to get a picture of what the disposition of a man of integrity is in the face of enmity. This was what David said when he cried out to Saul, "Look, this day your eyes have seen that the Lord delivered you today into my hand in the cave, and someone urged me to kill you. But my eyes spared you, and I said, I will not stretch out my hand against my Lord, for he is my Lord's anointed." What happened was David and his company of men were taking refuge in a cave. And by some strange God-arranged coincidence, Saul and his army of 3,000 chosen men of all Israel happened to be in the vicinity of the cave, and Saul went into the cave, not knowing that David and his men were hiding in the inner recesses. And after David had refused the temptation to take Saul's life at the urging of his men, he came out of the cave after Saul and cried out to Saul in those words that we have read. You see, what David did was to refuse to take matters into his own hand, however attractive it may seem to be. He could let go of an apparent chance of a lifetime. His men were urging him in whispers, "Come on, David, grab hold of this chance. If you don't do it now, it will never come to you again. This is God's provision for you. If you don't kill him, you're a dead duck. Take the opportunity now, or you won't have it again." But instead of succumbing to that, David could entrust himself to God's protection and deliverance. in his own way and in his own time, rather than avenge himself against his own conscience. He maintained his integrity and did not injure his own conscience. He trusted God enough to deal with the enemy without his own meddling or interference. God can do it without his help. He could have finished him off with one single blow, and yet he did not lift even one finger against him, because he saw him as God's anointed and left it to God to deal with him accordingly. The man of integrity will not be driven by enmity to respond in vindictiveness. He can afford to wait and to rest his case with God, who is the righteous judge of all. Are you hunted and hounded by other people unreasonably and unjustifiably? The person of integrity will not allow himself to stretch out his hand beyond what his God has permitted. Third, let us look at the character of Job in the Old Testament. Job maintained his integrity in the face of calamity. If you are to choose a Bible character who can stand for calamity or adversity, that would be Job. If we talk about Calamity Jane, this is Calamity Job. Think about what the man lost in one day. He lost all his property and his whole family, and he was about to lose his own health. Talk about personal disaster or catastrophe. Job is the one who personified all of this. The afflictions and suffering that Job went through represent the most trying type that any believer can face. This is not a direct result of any conscious sins that he had committed, because he was an upright man. Nor was it the work of wicked or oppressive men out to get him, because he was held in high esteem among his peers. He was a respectable person. Satan was instrumental in bringing about these sufferings, but God is the one who ultimately permitted it up to a point, as he often does in our lives. And one of the reasons he allows this is to do a deeper work in the life of someone who is already a God-fearing person. Listen to what God spoke to Satan concerning the man Job. God was on his side. In Job chapter 2, verse 3, "Then the Lord said to Satan, 'Have you considered my servant Job, that there is none like him on the earth, a blameless and upright man, one who fears God and shuns evil, and still he holds fast to his integrity, although you incited me against him to destroy him without cause?'" We see here that his integrity, his loyalty and faithfulness to God, was the heart of the issue that was contested by Satan before God, and God gave him permission to try him in this area. Sometimes man observes and comments and reasons this way: if that person is an upright man or a woman, why is this happening to him or her? In the same way that we do not just judge a book by its cover, so we should not judge a person merely by the external events that transpire and the happenings that are coming upon his life. But if everybody is asking this question, so much more difficult will it be for that person who is involved not to ask the same question. Why is this happening to me? What have I done to deserve this? But the person of integrity does not begin by questioning God. Instead, he or she begins and continues by trusting God all the way through. And this is what Job did, just as God said he would. He still holds fast to his integrity. So Job held fast to his integrity by recklessly trusting God in the face of everything that said the contrary. Even his own wife, his nearest and dearest on the earth, could not refrain from asking the same question. In verse 9, his wife said to him, "Do you still hold fast to your integrity? Curse God and die." That is the voice of the natural man, the flesh, rising up within us over and against the spiritual man, which is against God and which cannot understand the things of God. to hold fast to your integrity in times of adversity and calamity like this means to keep your sanity and your wholeness by not cracking up and letting the waters of the flood rush in, but just steadfastly trusting God in the same way that you have always trusted Him. So you see, Job refused to blame God or to curse God for all the troubles that have come upon him. He refused to give up believing and hoping in the God who created him. The same God who created him will also be the God who will conserve him through all this apparent catastrophe that's coming upon his life. And we hear Job's defiant cry of dependence on God from the depths of his anguish, best expressed in these words in Job chapter 13, verse 15, which is often quoted, when he cried out, "Though he slay me, yet will I trust in him." Again, we see this precious ingredient of trust that makes up integrity. We may not always understand, but we can always trust, just like a baby being carried in its mother's arms. In Paul's most personal epistle in 2 Corinthians, in chapter 12, he uses this phrase twice, although the context there is not about afflictions or sufferings, but he's talking about his visions and revelations. But he mentions twice in verses 2 and 3 of 2 Corinthians chapter 12. He said, "I do not know, God knows. I do not know, God knows." And it does us well, it serves us well to remember these precious words, especially in times of calamity, when things come one after another, relentlessly and without respite. And we can abide under the shadow of the Almighty and say, "I do not know, God knows." This is how a person of integrity will face calamity in his life. Fourthly and lastly, we are going to look at the character of Daniel. And we can find this in the beginning of the book of Daniel. We see in the character of Daniel what integrity means in the face of conformity. Integrity in the face of conformity. Daniel was the great prophet statesman of Israel during the exile, not in their home country. And he consistently showed what godly integrity means in the face of incredible pressures to conform. And you would expect that when you are living in the midst of idolatrous and heathen ways, especially in the world empires of their time, which is the Babylonian Empire and later on the Persian Empire, under which he had to live and to serve all his life. When we find ourselves totally immersed in an alien and anti-God culture, just like Daniel did, it takes great courage and integrity to refuse to compromise the truth and to refuse to conform to the spirit of the age. This is not just something that people like Daniel experience from days of old, but it has been so throughout the generations and very much the case for us today, when morality and virtues are under siege from all quarters in society. We see here what Daniel and his three closest friends determined to do from their earliest days in exile. They were specially selected from the best and brightest of the land for 3 years of training for the top echelons of civil service. They were like public service scholars of their day, and they were foreign talent. This was a high privilege and honor not to be jeopardized. You don't want to risk losing this high potential. But they had a high service and honor in mind. So this is what we read in Daniel chapter 1, verse 8. "But Daniel purposed in his heart that he would not defile himself with a portion of the king's delicacies, nor with the wine which he drank. Therefore he requested of the chief of the eunuchs that he might not defile himself." Daniel would not be lured into justifying and excusing himself against his own conscience. to conform to a diet contrary to God's requirements. God honored them for their integrity. Did they suffer any loss? No, they suffered no handicap. Instead, they were highly favored and honored. We can imagine what many of his peers probably said to Daniel and his friends. Come on, Daniel, this is not Jerusalem. We are thousands of kilometers away from home and we will probably die here. This is the new life. This is a new world. Let's live and let live. Let's make some modifications to our lifestyles. Let's adapt. You've got to be flexible in order to survive. Contrary to what others might have expected of them, God not only kept them and preserved them, but promoted them. What Daniel did as a young man stood him in good stead throughout his lifetime. When he encountered repeated attempts to undermine his faith again and again. Let me end with a memorable title of an early biography of Oswald Chambers, one of my favorite authors. This is by D.W. Lambert, and he entitled his biography, Oswald Chambers, An Unbribed Soul. That's a neat term for people of integrity. An unbribed soul is one who cannot be bought at any price. Beloved, are you an unbribed soul? Sometimes it seems so difficult in our day to keep integrity as Christians. But we have seen here that it's no different from what others in ages past encountered and have successfully negotiated by trusting God and standing for truth. So stand in the gap where God has placed you so that you can be a testimony to His truth. May you be refreshed by His presence and continue to be reached by His word of truth.
To walk in integrity is to walk with consistency in Christian character before God and before men. Thank you for that word, Kenneth. This is Times of Refreshing, a ministry of Bethesda Hall in partnership with TWR Asia. Tomorrow, Kenneth Wong shares a reflection on the compelling subject of reconciliation. I invite you to join us then for part one of Be Reconciled to God. Right now, I'd like to hear from you, and I have a variety of ways for you to contact us. You can send a text message to 9431-3813 or an email to info@timesofrefreshing.asia or send snail mail to Post Office Box 392, Thompson Road Post Office, Singapore 915714. I also invite you to visit our website, www.timesofrefreshing.asia, for more information. I'm McDaniel Phillips, inviting you to join us again for Times of Refreshing.